Yeah, okay. Well, can you hear me? I can hear myself. So, hi, my name is Hubert. You might know me online as Uhareg. I'm on the crypto team at Element, where crypto means encryption. And I'm also on the Matrix Spec Core team. but my talk isn't going to be about Matrix. So if you came here trying to find out what we're going to do about MOS on Matrix, sorry. I'll talk a little bit about it, but not much. I did some investigation into decentralizing MOS for Matrix, and I wrote a partial experimental MOS implementation in TypeScript, which was not very fun. So what is MLS, or messaging layer security? So it is an IETF standard. It's RFC 9420 for end-to-end encryption in instant messaging. And it can be, it's intended to apply to many different systems. So, many different messaging platforms can use it. It encrypts messages, obviously, if it's end-to-end encrypting for messaging. And also handshake messages, which are the messages used for controlling the MLS group, can be either encrypted or in clear text, although the sensitive parts are always encrypted. So that means that, for example, you have the option of either hiding the group membership from the server, or the server can see the group membership so that it can apply its own access controls or whatnot. It ensures consistent group state, so it controls the group membership. So everyone in the room can be assured that they that everyone knows who's in the room. And then there is also this concept of group context, which is sort of you can shove arbitrary data into the group, and then everyone in the group agrees what's in the group context. It provides sort of the normal things that you expect from end-to-end encryption in messaging. So forward secrecy, post-compromise security. The one thing it does not provide is deniability. So there is some work on trying to do that, but it's not in the standard. And updates are intended to be fast. So order log n work, where n is the number of members in the group. On average, there's a big asterisk there, because it really depends on how the group is managed. You can get into a really bad state where there's lots of holes in the tree, and you end up having to do order n work anyways. But the intention is that the common case is that it's order log n. Though inviting someone still requires linear time work. So how does MLS work? So I am only going to focus on a very tiny part of MLS, because I don't have 2 days to talk about it. So the part I'm going to talk about is the MLS epochs. And so an MLS group goes through different epochs, and each epoch has a secret associated, which is called an epoch secret. From the epoch secret, you derive other secrets, for example, encryption keys, I believe message authentication code keys, all sorts of things. And the epoch secret, each epoch secret is derived from the previous epoch secret and a secret that you get from the commit message that created the epoch. And then you sort of, when you get a new epoch, then you throw away the old epochs. So this is a diagram that comes from the RFC. So this sort of shows that you have the epoch secret, you derive, well, this just shows the encryption secret, but you derive a bunch of other secrets from it. You use the encryption secret to derive keys from the secret tree. The secret tree you use to decrypt messages. So you, when you get in a message that creates a new epoch, you decrypt it, and then that gives you the commit secret. You combine it with the previous epoch secret, and then you get the next epoch secret. So in normal MLS, commit messages are ordered. So you have epoch number 0, and then epoch number 1, and then epoch number 2. And you only apply one commit to each epoch, and they're all in a linear order. You have a delivery service that enforces the order so that everyone agrees that this is, you know, this is the commit that came that modifies epoch 0, and then I get epoch 1. So everyone is in sync. But what happens if you don't have a single delivery service to order them, and so you can't ensure that everyone sees the commit messages in the same order? So there are two different approaches that have been published as IETF drafts. There's decentralized MLS, also called DMLS. And this was written by people from Phoenix R&D, and it was based on work by people from Amazon who were formerly Wickr people, but they got bought out by Amazon. And then there's also distributed MLS, also known as DMLS. And this was written by people from Germ Network and researchers from the US Naval Postgraduate School. So I'm going to give a brief introduction for both of them and then do some comparisons. Decentralized MLS. So instead of having a linear order of epochs, it allows you to have multiple descendants. So you can have multiple senders modifying the same epoch, and then so you get sort of a tree of epochs rather than a line. It uses some fancy cryptography called puncturable pseudo-random functions so that you can't re-derive an epoch secret to preserve forward secrecy. So here's a little diagram that I drew up. The circles are epochs. The labels on the lines are the people who created the epochs. So we start off with a single epoch, and then Alice and Bob try to do something to the group at the same time. So maybe they want to update their own keys in the group. They happen at the same time, so it's not like Alice sends her commit, and then Bob sees Alice's commit and then sends his own. They happen at the same time, so they both modify the same epoch. So then there's a fork in the tree. And then Carol wants to send her own commit. She has to decide which epoch to base her commit off of. Say she decides to base it off of Alice's epoch, and then so she creates her commit based on that. So yeah, when Alice sends her commit, then she'll send it to the group. Everyone will see the group, and then so everyone will derive all of the three new epochs. So one of the problems with just doing this with MLS is that, so say after Alice derives her epoch, then she still needs to keep around the epoch secret for the original commit, because after Bob sends his commit, then she needs the epoch secret from the original commit to derive Bob's commit. And that poses a problem for forward secrecy, because you're holding on to key material for longer than you need to, or longer than you should. And so if someone compromises Alice's client, then they can get the epoch secret and then replay Alice's commit and then rederive this whole epoch and then decrypt old messages using the secrets. So that's where this puncturable pseudo-random functions comes in. So if you know if pseudo-random function is sort of function, you give it some input and then it spits out some pseudo-random data. The puncturable, so if you give it the same data, it'll give you the same pseudo-random data. The puncturable part is once you given it the input data once, then you can't give it the same data again. So it can only derive the pseudo-random data once. And it's a bit of crypto magic. I'm not going to try to explain it because I don't understand it either. It just works. So with this approach, there are a few open questions. So how do you manage the forks? So if you remember here, we had Alice and Bob's commits. So Carol needs to decide which commit to use. So Carol uses Alice's, she decided to use Alice's commit. You know, was that the best choice? And then what are we going to do about Bob's commit, right? And then another question is, now that we have multiple epochs that we need to worry about, how do we make sure that everything's consistent? For example, membership. So say if on the left, Alice invited her friend Dan, and Bob invited Emily, you know, so then on one side of the tree we have different memberships. How do we combine them? So this sort of goes into the work that I did, which I also called decentralized MLS, another DMLS, but I spelled it with an S instead of a Z. So if you get confused, yeah. So it was just a way to decide which epoch to use, how to copy updates from one epoch to another. It sort of assumes that we have some sort of algorithm to determine membership and group state. So in Matrix, we have the state resolution algorithms that we run. In Matrix, currently, that's done on the server side. And when I was doing my experimentation, I just used what the server told the client to use for the membership. But there's no reason, well, other than complexity, that we couldn't also run the state resolution algorithm on the client. So some downsides to decentralized with a Z MLS. So it potentially requires a lot of storage because you need to keep all the previous epochs or information about the previous epochs in order to handle forks. So there may be ways of cleaning things up if you have sort of a time window that you accept old epochs from, but it's that's something that would need to be figured out. And managing forks can be complicated. So if you have a lot of forks, then you sort of have to look at all of them, figure out what information you need to take from each of them, and so forth. And it's sort of an open question. The decentralized MOS draft, the IETF draft, doesn't really deal with any of these issues. It just describes what messages and modifications you need in MOS in order to do those things, but it doesn't describe how to do all this management. So the other DMLS, distributed MLS, takes a completely different approach, where it says that each sender will maintain their own MLS group. And so each sender sort of acts as their own delivery service, because they're the only person who can commit to their, to make commits to their own group. But you can also look at other people's groups and pull in information from their groups. So for example, if Alice updates her key in her group, then Bob can look at that update and then update Alice's key in his group, so that the cryptographic information is up to date. It sort of sidesteps the question of how do you maintain consistent membership by saying that each sender decides on their own who's going to be a member of their group. So there's less of a need to have a consistent membership between groups. So downsides to this approach is that you lose the log n performance of MLS. So remember at the beginning I said that the log n performance depends on how you manage your group. So distributed MLS, basically the way it uses MLS, you just lose the log n performance. It's always linear time. And you lose the shared group context and the shared membership. So depending on your application, that may or may not be important. So even though you lose shared membership, you can still see the group membership from everyone else's sender group, so that you can tell who they've sent the message to. So now I'll do some comparisons between the two. So the first question is, which one is more MLS-like? And this is possibly a bit controversial because it is very subjective. And so I will say that they're both more MLS-like than the other in different ways. So decentralized MLS, it tries to keep more of the MLS semantics, in my opinion. So you get it tries to keep the shared membership, the group context, and the order log n performance. But it requires more modifications to the protocol. So it requires this new way of storing the epoch secret as a puncturable pseudo-random function. And so that's requires some cryptography analysis that hasn't been done yet. So distributed MLS, it requires fewer changes to the MLS group because you can, you know, basically just use MLS as it is, but you lose the semantics, such as the shared group context. Which one is faster? So decentralized MLS by itself can be order log n. Although again, it depends on how you manage your group. But managing forks can be expensive, and it depends on how many forks you have. So if, you know, most of the time everything looks linear, then it'll basically be the same performance as MOS. If you have, you know, a few forks here and there, then it'll quickly resolve. But if you get a lot of forking in your tree, then it can get expensive because you have to look at a whole lot of different epochs, try to merge things together. And distributed MOS, as I mentioned before, is always linear time. What about storage requirements? So decentralized MOS is potentially unbounded, but you know, if you add in some way of pruning old forks, then you know, maybe you only need to store a few different epochs at a time. So it might be closer to linear space like MOS is. Distributed MOS, if you just do a naive implementation, you store, you have n different senders, each MOS group is linear space, so that's, you know, quadratic space in total, which isn't that great. But the way distributed MOS works, a lot of that information is irrelevant to you as a receiver, because like in each MOS group, every node has a signing key, so that you can verify that, yes, this person actually sent the message. But if you know that this group is only going to have one sender, then you only need to keep the signing key for that one sender. You also don't need to keep any information about how do you encrypt things to other people in that group, because you're not going to use that group for encryption. So you can throw away a lot of information. I think that you can get away with storing a constant amount of information per receiving group. I haven't actually gone through to figure it out, but I believe it's constant. At worst, I think it's logarithmic. So you, of course, need to keep your own MOS tree for sending, which will be linear, and you have a linear number of receiving groups. So in total, it'll just be linear, or I think at worst, n log n, which isn't too bad. So which one should you use if you're designing a distributed or decentralized protocol? So distributed MOS, I think, is, in my opinion, it's more ready to use because there's fewer open questions. You don't need to worry about. So distributed MOS is the one where each person has their own sending group. So you don't have to worry about, you know, managing the forks, things like that. Decentralized MOS has more details to work out, such as the group management and the state resolution and sort of things. But they have different trade-offs, and it also depends on the underlying messaging protocol. So, for example, in Matrix, I believe that decentralized MOS would be a better fit. So in Matrix, servers are usually available in the common case. Servers are mostly up and in contact with each other. It's designed to be able to handle net splits, but most of the time, if a server is up, then it can contact all the other servers. So in the common case, I believe that decentralized MOS is a better fit for MOS, for Matrix. For a peer-to-peer messaging system such as Ring, Talks, or Briar, I believe that distributed MLS is a better fit. For XMPP, so multi-user chats in XMPP, for the purposes of this talk only, I would consider them centralized. XMPP is obviously not centralized, but each room individually has a server that every message goes through, and it can act as the centralized delivery service. So for multi-user chats, you can just use plain MLS. You don't need to worry about this stuff. One-on-one chats are different in XMPP, though. One-on-one chats, you send your message to your server. It relays the message to the other person's server and then sends it on. So there are a couple of different approaches. One of them is you could just use plain MLS, but just designate one server as the delivery service. Because if you're doing a one-on-one chat and the other person's server is down, then you're not going to have much success chatting anyways. If you don't want to do that, then my suspicion is that distributed MLS would be a better fit for one-on-one chats in XMPP. So there are other approaches to doing MLS on decentralized platforms. One of them is that you can centralize the handshake messages, but decentralize the application messages. So when you're just sending like a chat message, you can do that normally as you would over your decentralized network. But then when you're trying to do an update to the MLS group, then you would have a single server that handles the ordering of those things. So the downside to that, of course, is that if this single point of failure fails, then you can still send messages, but you can't make any changes to the group, which means that we would lose, for example, post-compromised security. So if someone's client gets compromised, then you can't update the MLS group, and then the attacker can still keep reading messages. You could go a bit further and have a pool of delivery services, and you pick one of them to be the delivery service, and if that one goes down, then you pick a different one. There's a bunch of literature out there on leader elections. Most of them, they pretty much require that most of the candidates are online so that they can come to a consensus. So this might not work for some situations. For example, peer-to-peer, where you have a bunch of things and most people won't be online at the same time. And then there's completely different algorithms that can be used. There's this thing, distributed continuous group key agreement, which was written by Widener and Kletman and a few other people. There's this thing called BCHEM from Ink and Switch. Both of those are on my reading list. I'm not very familiar with them. But they're both intended for decentralized situations. Or we can just keep doing what most people have been doing, which is using the signal protocol and variants of the signal protocol, such as OhmMinMegaOhm in Matrix and OhmMemo in XMPP. So that's it. Any questions?
In the future, can you see the opportunities for where the epochs are forked?
Yes.
Is there opportunities for them to coalesce later on in time?
Right. So the question is, let me find the diagram. So the question is, when you have the forking, is there opportunity for the forks to coalesce later on? So the way the decentralized MOS IETF draft is written, it just handles the forking. Part of the work that I was doing was sort of it was so pulling in information from the different forks and then adding information to say that yes, so Carol would say I'm basing it off of Alice's epoch, but I've also seen Bob's epoch and I've merged in information from there. And then so there isn't sort of a formal merge operation, but it sort of assumes that after Carol sends her epoch, then Bob's epoch will sort of be ignored for the rest of time, and everyone will sort of base it off of there. Yeah.
To me, it sounded like this would probably affect the scalability of chat. So if you have a chat with many people, they would have many different forks to get together. Is there any thought about this, or how solved?
Yeah, so the question was about scalability. If you have a lot of people and you have a lot of forks, this is an open question. We haven't really figured it out yet. The forking only happens when you do an update to the group. So that's if you need to change your key material, or if you invite someone, or if someone leaves the group. So it's not something that happens all the time, right? It's something that happens occasionally. So like if you have something that happens, even in a big group, I wouldn't expect people to be sending commits more often than say like once a minute. So in a situation like in Matrix where servers are mostly connected, I would not expect there to be much forking even in large rooms. But it's an open question.
So it doesn't trigger on every message, it triggers
no,
on
it, yeah, it's yeah, it's not on every message that you send. It's only on certain group operations. Yeah.
Did you already compare distributed MLS with sender keys, like the approach Signal uses in terms of performance and security? Because it seems to be relatively similar, because each user wants to send something with his key from his group.
Yeah. So the question is about comparing distributed MLS with sender keys, because they seem kind of similar. I personally don't have much experience with distributed MLS. And I don't know if the group who's worked on that has done comparisons with sender keys. Yep. Yeah, so the question was about distributed MOS on a federated service, whether you can do a group per server rather than per sender. That might be possible. It would be something we'd have to explore. We haven't really, there's a lot of possibilities that we could look into, and we haven't really looked into it that much. Okay, I guess that's it.